Welcome to Defined by Moments. As today's beliefs and behaviors determine who we become tomorrow, this moment, right now, is how we learn to live better so that we can lead better. Now, let's turn it over to Dr. Joel Medley for today's lesson from God's Word.
Thanks for joining us once more with Defined by Moments, and grab those Bibles and turn to Proverbs chapter 10. So, Proverbs is really divided into three major sections, and with our last episode, we concluded the first section in chapters 1 through 9, where Solomon is really laying out his case for the choice to choose wisdom. It is contrasted very clearly with folly. But what happens now is we turn into what some folks have called the Proverbs proper. This is a compilation that includes clusters of sayings. They are typically, you know, one or two verse couplets. They could be several sections that fit together that really advance a specific theme. Now, not always are these sections very clear, but the deep meaning still abounds for us. A Scottish Presbyterian pastor from the 1800s, you know, calls chapter 10, and particularly this section, what he calls the miscellaneous treasure. So there may not be a clear order or a rhyme or a outline for the specifics of each of these sections, but the meaning is powerful for us. Now, I'm going to break these apart in what seems to make sense to me. There are scholars that would do this differently, and that's fine. But what we're going to do today is we're going to look at really Proverbs chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. And this is from my perspective, righteousness in action. So what we're going to see in the first six verses are a contrast of wisdom and how it's implemented in certain things. In the verses 7 through 10, we get into three very clear R's that we all need. So let's go ahead and look at Proverbs chapter 10 and start with verse 1. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is sorrow to his mother. So here in just this first simple verse, we see that, you know, the author has clearly stated once again that these are a compilation of sayings by Solomon. And then it immediately gets into, you know, a bridge between the prior section where Solomon very clearly had made paternal appeals to his children. A wise son makes a glad father. You know, what a joy it is for parents to be able to know that their children understand truth and that they're making decisions that reflect they have wisdom. I mean, that is just the joy that any parent would have, that maybe all the heartache and the time and the effort that was put into them made the difference. You know, we see something very similar in the New Testament in the second and third John that we see in verse 4 of both of them, where he says, I rejoice greatly to find that some of your children were what? Walking in truth, just as they were commanded by our Father. We see that again in 3 John verse 4, where he says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. The flip side to this is a harsh reality, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. We read through that and we gloss over it, but there is pain here. I mean, think of a son who has done things that are wrong, that has resulted in, you know, him going to jail or breaking the law or punishment, and how that pains the mother. So this is a hard piece, that their decision to accept what has been offered to them, their walk, could reflect wisdom or not. So we see in verse 1 that wisdom and the walk are related. But look at what happens in verses 2 and 3. It says, there's treasures gained by wisdom do not profit, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the craving of the wicked. So here we see how wisdom is related to gain. You know, in the first verse, it talks about, you know, getting profit, getting money through evil means, and it says it does not profit. In other words, it doesn't grow over time. You may be able to get some short-term gain from it, but In the long run, you're going to lose it. Why? Because you have to leave everything here when you die. And the true investment that we as Christians need to make is that our treasures are in heaven, that they're there for an eternity rather than being here where things will just rust and will come completely apart. What's really being talked about here with wisdom as gain is that there is a lot of short-sightedness in not understanding that if we chase possessions here in the world, we're never going to be satisfied because we're always going to want one more. That's not wisdom. That's foolishness. But look at verse 4. A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. So if we're seeing that there's short-sightedness in verses 2 and 3, we could see that that theme is still continued here in verses 4 and 5, but really what Solomon is doing here is he's offering us a short understanding of wisdom and work. Wisdom is shown in our work because it requires effort. There's diligence that must be done. Those are the things that are important. Because if we're lazy, that laziness is going to lead to us having lack. But if we're working, we're doing everything that we can to try and provide. I mean, think of the example of Gideon in Judges chapter 6. Where did God find him? Well, he was threshing wheat in a wine press. That is not the normal utilization of a wine press, is to thresh wheat. But he was doing that to try and provide for his family so that the Midianites would not steal what precious little food that they had. He was not using a slack hand. He was being diligent, and that was being noticed. So it comes down to choices. I mean, you choose how you're going to walk. You choose how you're going to make your profit and your gain. You choose how you're going to work. But look at verse 6. All of those choices lead to a fork in the road. You're going to go one way, you're going to go the other. It says, blessings are on the head of the righteous, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. In other words, it's wisdom and your garb. It's the clothing that you wear. If you are wise, guess what? There are going to be blessings. There are praises that are going to be heaped upon you. You will wear them almost like a crown. So, you think in our modern culture, if we support a team, what do? We'll put on a baseball cap, and that means, hey, we really support them. Well, it's almost as if the work that is being done by an individual, they're wearing the hat that says, hey, I'm wise. They're easy to identify. But the latter part of this, where it says the mouth of the wicked conceals violence, if you think back to these ancient customs during this time period, if a criminal was being condemned, his face and his mouth were specifically being covered so that he could not speak. So you can almost see the imagery here that someone that is wicked, that mouth is being covered because the actions have already spoken. So what we see is that righteousness or wisdom is in action. And that leads us to how this small little section, from my viewpoint, concludes with verses 7, verses 8, and verses 9 through 10. Verse 7, to me, gives us our routine. Now let's look at that and break it apart. The memory of the righteous is a blessing, but the name of the wicked will rot. This speaks of legacy. How you're going to be remembered when you're no longer here. There's no one that wakes up one day and says, you know what? I want to have a bad legacy. I want people to remember me that I stole things. I was a thief. I lied all the time. I was lazy. That's the legacy that I want to leave. None of us wake up and say that. But if you look at our actions on a daily basis, someone could draw the conclusion that that is the case. So what we see here is that if we want to make sure that we have a memory where the righteous is considered a blessing, where that individual is remembered in a good way, then we do that by our daily routine. Our routine creates the long-lasting memory. So if you want, if you're not happy and satisfied with what you think people remember you by, then you need to change your daily routine. Now, I want to pause here because this can almost come across as, well, the way to fix it is you just change everything on the outside. That is not the case. Yes, the desire to have a good legacy is a positive thing, but it is not enough to make bad men good. Now, we're not going to get into the aspect that a lot of us think that we are good when, in fact, compared to the standards of a holy God, we are bad. But we need to recognize that the most important decision we ever make is what we do with Jesus. We accept the gift that God has given us or we reject it. There's a consequence there. But if we have accepted that gift, then we need to look at our daily routine. Where are we spending our time and our effort? Is it on all of our hobbies? Is it spending time on Facebook or any other aspect of social media? Is it working on a car? Or are we investing our time in learning the truth of God so that we can then share it with others? Our daily routine will lead to a specific outcome. So that's verse 7. But look at verse 8. It says, "The wise of heart will receive commandments, but a babbling fool will come to ruin." So if verse 7 is our routine, verse 8 is our responsibility. That is very clear here, that a wise person will make a choice to receive the commandment. But guess what? A fool will also make a choice that leads them to ruin. We cannot blame other people for our own trouble. We have to look in the mirror. We have to reflect upon our contribution here, and we have to own it. And quite frankly, this boils down to something very simple. The first part of the verse is humility. The second part of the verse is pride. Those that are humble will recognize the errors of their way. They will apologize. They will do what they need to do to make amends, and then they will change. But those that are prideful will dig in their heels, will point the finger at others, and will seek to make no change whatsoever. You know, later on in Proverbs, we'll see in chapter 27 and verse 19, you know, a verse that says, you know, as in water, face reflects face, and so the heart of a man reflects the man. In other words, when we look at water, when we look in a mirror, we see who we really are. And then you can interpret that latter part to mean the same thing. How we act shows what we really are in our heart. We have to own the responsibility. And where does it go back to? It goes back to our routine. We are the ones that make those decisions that lead to the results that we're getting. If you don't like the results, you've got to go back to change the routine. And then finally, we'll look at verses 9 and 10. It says, "Whoever walks in integrity walks securely. But he who makes his way crooked will be found out. Whoever winks with the eye causes trouble. And a babbling fool will come to ruin." So we see routine in verse 7. We see our responsibility in verse 8. In verses 9 and 10, we see the results. The first part of verse 9 is it's a positive result. If you walk with integrity, if you are walking in innocence, then you're going to walk securely. It means that your feet are not going to stumble. You're not going to slide. You can trust at where that foot is placed. It will hold firm. Now, there's an important delineation here. The Hebrew term that is translated in our English Bibles as integrity, in some places it's translated as upright, actually refers back to a piece of the high priest's breastplate. So think about the high priest who once a year would go in to make atonement for the sins of the nation of Israel. If he was not pure before God, if he went in with blemishes and he went in unclean, God would just strike him dead. So think about the importance. In other words, if we are going to walk in integrity, it is as if we are innocent before a holy God. That is very powerful in the imagery. Because is that the kind of life that you're leading? If it's not, then you need to take responsibility for it and you need to make some changes. But there's a second kind of result that's here. We see that in the latter part of verse 9. But he who makes his way crooked will be found out. If you're not living the way that you should be, people will notice. You might think you're deceiving others, but you're not. You know, there's an interesting story told years ago as paving companies were becoming, you know, very popular with the Eisenhower interstate system, that questions were being asked about why were roads always having turns when it seems like it could have just been straight. Well, you know, the excuses were often given, well, there's topographical reasons. You know, we've had to make some changes based upon the geological structures underneath. When really what it came out to be, a lot of these companies were paid by the mile. So if you throw in some extra curves here or there, you're padding your pocketbook. So once that was found out, some additional expectations were placed in contracts. But why? Because it was found out. So stop and think about this. Our results, other people see them. But the question is, are we seeing them? Because again, we often compare ourselves to other people when instead we should be comparing ourselves to the standard of a holy God. So this aspect of walking in innocence is contrasted by those who do not walk in innocence. They walk in guilt. Verse 10 takes it one step further where you see, you know, the winking of an eye. It's like, hey, you know, I promised to do this, wink, wink, meaning I'm not going to. So what this does is examples are shown to contrast with those that walk in the life of integrity. So this is wisdom in action. This is righteousness in action. But let's step back and let's take three big lessons for our daily life from it. Number one, if you want a lasting legacy, then your daily decisions create it. We often are so focused on looking forward to tomorrow that we lose the value of today. And what does James tell us? He says, who are you to boast of tomorrow? Because we're not guaranteed that next day. But instead, we need to say, if the Lord wills, I plan to do this. What does Paul say in the book of Ephesians? We need to redeem the time. Why? Because the days are evil. They're flying away. We cannot be so future-oriented that we missed the power of our present work. So your daily decisions matter. Your decision to not spend time in prayer with God matters for tomorrow. Your decision not to invest in God's Word by reading it, but instead, you know, flipping through a hunting magazine or just trolling through some social media posts, it matters. We need to make sure that we're investing our time in what's going to give us the most valuable return. That's number one. Number two, our legacy on earth does not determine our eternal standing. We can invest and give away a fortune, you know, to needy charities where people go, oh, he was a good person. He always kept his word. We can do all of those things and yet reject the offer that God has given us. And the supposed good that we did here will have no value when we stand before our Creator and He says, depart from me, I never knew you. God doesn't want our works. He wants our love. He wants our life. He wants our commitment. He wants our devotion. And it starts with what Solomon has said at the very beginning of Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. But what do fools do? They despise wisdom and instruction. We have to humble ourselves and really see who we are as not good people, but bad people. That God created us. We broke the relationship. He sent His Son to give us a chance to restore that relationship. And we either receive that gift or we reject that gift. And whatever choice we make, there is a consequence on either side of that. So our legacy on earth does not determine our eternity. Number three, our internal conditions are seen by external choices. Let me say that again. Our internal conditions are seen by external choices. If you look at verse 2, verse 3, verse 6, and verse 7, you will see the term righteous or righteousness. This is something that we are going to spend a lot of time talking about in the latter part of this chapter, because Solomon continues to push forward this idea of being just, of being lawful, of being moral. If we believe that we are good, then we're going to justify things that we do for our benefit when, quite frankly, they're not good. And again, it goes back to the comparison of, if we're comparing me against you, I might look good. But when I look at the Almighty, all-powerful Creator, who existed before our time ever began, whose character is nothing but good and holy and perfect and pure and righteous, if I compare myself against that, that comparison pales. I cannot be compared to Him. So with this aspect, we have to look at several different things. Is the result that we want an eternity with Him? If the answer to that is yes, then we need to take the responsibility to look at our life and see, are we living one filled with humility or one filled with pride? And based upon that decision, we need to look at our daily routine to see, does it match up or not? Because our routine gives us personal responsibility for the results in our lives. It is my hope and it is my prayer that as we look at this, we go back to verse 1, and that whether we are sons, whether we are daughters, that we make our parents glad rather than bring sorrow to those parents through our choices as we align with foolishness instead of wisdom. Thank you so much for listening to Defined by Moments, where we discuss topics showing that how we live determines how we lead. Hope to have you back in the not-too-distant future, and you take care.